Today is Thursday. It is February 22nd, 2018. It's 11:12 in the morning, and I'm John Williams. This is the Mincing Rascals, a weekly podcast we record in the studios of WGN Radio in beautiful downtown Chicago. If you like this, I think you'll like my weekday show. I can be heard Monday through Friday on WGN Radio from 1 to 3 and Saturday mornings from 10 to noon.
I'm Steve Bertrand. I host the Business Lunch on WGN Radio every weekday afternoon at noon.
And you're wearing a nice Mr. Rogers blue sweater. I'm Kristen McQuarrie of the Chicago Tribune editorial board.
Mr. Rogers had an anniversary this week.
He did.
50 years.
Oh, wow.
His death?
No, 50 years, I think, since the show started or something.
Yeah, right. Eric?
I'm Eric Zorn, the bleary-eyed columnist from the Tribune.
Been working hard, have you, Eric?
No, I stayed up until like 1:15 last night watching the women's hockey game.
I just walked
horrific.
By some of our sports guys. They go, did you watch it? Did you stay up till 2 and watch the hockey game?
So great.
And I wish I had. Who knew women's hockey could be so exciting?
They're really good. I tell you the truth, I'd never watched women's hockey until last night. And they were really good. It was really a great game.
You didn't
game.
Get many chances. I mean, it's women's hockey for crying out loud, but I guess it was great. First time the American women have beaten the Canadians in a long time.
And some local people, right?
Yeah.
Wasn't there a couple of local players? Mm-hmm.
Before we get to maybe things we're watching, let's do this. President Trump has suggested at a town hall listening meeting that perhaps we should arm teachers to make schools safer. The president was in listening mode. He allowed television cameras in. He seems to be open to some things that mainstream Republicans are not. But what do we think of his suggestion? Kristen, I'll ask you first that one way to make the schools safer is to arm some of the teachers.
I think it should be up to local districts. I agree with Betsy DeVos, who was ridiculed at her hearing for Secretary of Education when she tried to suggest that we are a very different country. Some parts of the country are more pro-gun than others. I think local school districts should decide.
Is that the moose defense?
The bear.
I think it was a bear. A bear.
Well, that's where I fall on most issues, if I can, especially educational issues. I don't know. This sort of feels different than that to me. Here's the way I've always put it. Your little minivan pulls up, and your little Johnny or Jeannie jumps out of the van. Do you want them going into a school that has guns in it or a school that doesn't have guns in it? I don't want guns in there.
We create our own realities in our mind. Like John Kelly is going to put the White House in order because he's a good guy. You know, we may or may not have been right there. So we're assuming that all teachers are responsible, upstanding citizens who can handle the responsibility.
Point.
And they're not. There are tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of them. And, you know, I've had teachers, my kids have had teachers who I don't want, even with training, to have a gun. So there's that.
Maybe they do that. They say, okay, which of you teachers want to be armed to protect the school?
Those are the ones
hands
you don't
go
want.
Up, don't
right.
get guns.
Right.
Because I don't trust them.
It doesn't seem like a great idea, frankly, to me, to have teachers armed. Because, first of all, you're asking a lot of a teacher to have a gun. I mean, it's got to be locked up because you know teachers have their backs turned and so on. So that's got to be, and then all of a sudden, the teacher's going to have to get it out. Is going to have to know how to use it. They have to go through training if they're going to be able to use it well. I don't mind the idea of like armed guards necessarily at a school, especially.
And there was an armed guard at this school in Parkland, and the shooter still showed up. So
it's
a deterrent.
Campus for crying out loud. Think about that. The idea that the armed guard is going to be right there in the right spot and take things.
Right.
Take care of things is a long shot.
I do want to reframe it a little bit,
so
though,
to speak.
Because I think that I think the White House gets credit for this. I thought, you know, and everyone's talking about the armed teacher thing, but the president tweeted out again today and did come out for more gun control measures than any Republican predecessor in a long time. And I'm telling you, I've been wiping tears out of my eyes for the past 48 hours, and I sat in the car yesterday listening on radio to this kid, Sam Zeif was his name, the student at the school, and Sam Zeif, and the stories that they told, and for the president to sit there, an NRA president, to invite these people to tell these incredibly emotional stories there, I think is a real step. I think that there's a positive thing there, and I think they should get credit for it.
I don't think
the only thing we should be talking about is arming teachers out of this, because I do think there was some forward movement otherwise.
Even though he had a note in his hand to say, I hear you.
Yeah, I know, but you know.
Oh, you know, the notes being played is a good thing, Eric. You're going to criticize him for having five
it's
points
not being
on
played
a note
as a good
saying,
thing,
I hear you?
Oh.
That's not a talking point. That's just like, have empathy, you crusty
well,
old man?
Well, he doesn't usually. And so here are five things he... I've given speeches or talks where I have real simple, obvious, broad notes like welcome and conclusion. And if I hear you or what can we do for you is written on a note, I don't think that's
yeah,
so
and,
bad.
And really, Eric, I think that's one of the things we fall... You know, people are doing that and then we are losing sight of the fact that this would, there was real power there. You know... My recommendation is going to be to find this kid's 4-minute video and watch it again because I listened to it live and I'm serious. I was in a parking lot, incredibly moved. Last night I watched it again on TV and listening to one of the dads who spoke at the Florida town hall meeting yesterday. I heard him on TV this morning, you know, and they said, "What is your home like now?" He lost his daughter. His daughter was shot in the back as she ran away, and she said, "He said." You know, we start every day at the cemetery now. We get up and we go to the cemetery and that's how we spend our day. And, you know, I just think that we're in this incredible moment right now with these articulate voices that, you know, maybe we really are moving toward. And I don't know what, I mean, I don't know what the solution is. But it seems like we're more seriously talking about fixing things than we ever have before.
Who knew this shooting would cause it to tip? Maybe it will. Maybe it should. But then the question is to where.
After watching the Senate, how many years ago was it, with the Sandy Hook parents, and those were grade school kids, not that that makes it any tougher, but you had first graders and kindergartners gunned down in that case, teachers hiding in closets, and you still had resistance to do some just really basic things with background checks, internet sales, magazines, still unable to do it then. So I hope that maybe we'll be able to have a rational conversation about some common sense gun changes that actually about 85% of NRA supporters want
right,
also.
Right.
But this country, there's such a devotion to the Second Amendment, almost like a religious obsession with it, that I don't know that we'll see actual
policy
change.
It's not about the Second Amendment. And, you know, Wayne LaPierre spoke to CPAC just about an hour ago, and he said the people calling for gun control measures right now are exploiting the kids who were shot, which to me is like saying the umbrella companies are exploiting the rain showers, right? I mean, the gun control people are trying to stop things like that. Umbrellas are trying to protect people from rain. I don't understand LaPierre's logic.
I think he's saying, and you have to look at each case individually, but a lot of the gun control measures that are discussed would not have stopped some of these people from acquiring weapons over time when we look back at all the different shootings. And I understand that, but I don't think that is a case for not trying something.
Right.
We have really loose gun laws right next door to us in Indiana. The new U.S. attorney, I don't know, I'm sure you guys get his press releases, but he's been really tough on going after gun trafficking. And it is a problem. Straw purchases are a problem. We have one or two gun shops in Illinois that are clearly irresponsible, where you have weapons at crime scenes traced back to these same places. There is more we can do. And I'm sort of tired of just being stuck in this vacuum of, you know, any sort of sensical restriction is an infringement on the Second Amendment. It's not.
I agree that we've tried nothing. Although they did do some restrictions in Connecticut that the governor says have worked well there. By and large, we haven't.
If you look internationally, a lot of countries have far lower rates of gun violence than our country has. And you can't just attribute that to, you know, I don't know, ethnic strife or whatever you want to try to
They
point
don't have
to.
Our Constitution, though, Eric. And there is a very real, and I understand, devotion to how our country is founded differently than those countries, but
we're paying a huge cost for that in gun deaths. I mean, there's a time to sort of rethink the paranoia, I think, that animates the NRA when they talk any time you propose any sort of, you know, like, how about limiting the size of magazines? Like, oh well, that's not going to work. Well, it might if you limit the sale of certain kinds of weapons. It certainly worked in Australia to cut down on mass shootings there. If you have some ideas like this, they think like, well, the next step is going to be they're going to come into your house and take all your guns away.
I know.
And that's what they gin up among people. And frankly, you know, you got to give them credit because their voters come out. Their voters support. And when Marco Rubio said yesterday during one of those forums, he said, the NRA isn't buying me. They're not changing my votes. They're supporting my point of view. And That's really true. That's what they do. They support politicians who support them.
They are.
It's not their money. It really isn't their money. It's their voters that they control.
That's true. They are radical, though. The NRA is a completely radical gun rights group in the same way that I actually view Planned Parenthood on the left. You can't have any restrictions on abortion. You can't wish that kids had to get permission from their parents. You can't have a third trimester issue. We have these voices that are so extreme and radical on different sides, and I think that's how the NRA is. You can't be in favor of anything, any gradation of gun control, or you are enemy number one to them.
And if you look at it, you know, it's the slippery slope, right? The NRA is saying if we allow one restriction, then it's going to be the next one. It's going to be a slippery slope down until no one has any guns. The slippery slope actually has been completely in play, but is going down the other side of the mountain. You know, first we're just like, well, we're going to have concealed carry in some of these states. Well, no, now everyone's going to have concealed carry. Well, now you don't have to buy a permit in Indiana. So the slope has slipped, but it's the other way now to where teenagers can go buy AR-15s, you know, at the 7-Eleven.
To the point where the president is saying maybe we should arm the teachers. The quip my wife pointed out to me this week was, we don't buy pencils for teachers, but we're going to buy them Glocks. I mean, teachers are picking up some of their costs.
Buy the stock. Think of the gun sales if every school has got to buy a couple of guns for every building.
Okay. In the Chicago Tribune, different topic now, cartoonist Scott Stantis drew a Me Too tornado blowing over Mike Madigan. Now there are two allegations of men close to the speaker harassing women in Springfield. His knock-it-off attitude doesn't seem to have worked, and his desire to have his own counsel oversee an investigation hardly makes this feel independent. So here we go again this week, guys. Will this be the time that the tide turns against the speaker? Will he step down, or will there be? I don't even know what it is supposed to be.
This is the thematic question, because the first whole segment we did was on, is this a tipping point, a turning point? And you're asking the same question about Madigan. Is this a turning point? Of course, we don't know the answer, but it does seem to me, and I wrote a column on this last week, that Mike Madigan, no matter what you think of what he's done or his policies or anything like that, is clearly a millstone around the Democrats' neck this election cycle. They're all arguing that in the debate last night, they're all arguing about who's got the most distance from Mike Madigan. That's a crazy position to have for someone who is the Speaker of the House and the leader of your party in the state, that everybody can't get far enough away from him or is embarrassed about how close they are to him.
Gee, who does that sound like? But so what happens then, Eric?
He's 75 years old, I think. I think he should say, I've had a nice long
run
here.
Yeah,
have a party I'm going to step down. I actually don't think that these two Me Too cases are sufficient on their own to cause him to have to step down or step away. I don't think they're that his. Even though I don't think he handled them well anyway, the first one well. I think that it's just time. It's time.
He's
you know?
Never going to step
I know,
down,
this is why,
and he's especially not going to step down when he's being thrown under the bus. His ego is way too fragile for that. Fragile. Maybe that mean the opposite. The only way to get rid of Speaker Madigan is to have Republicans win a majority of seats in the Illinois House. End story. End stop. That's it.
I wonder if
you
that'd
keep
be
sending
to
Democrats
to
Springfield. In the fall, during the general election, you reelect him, period.
Okay, here's another local story. If WGN Radio or the Chicago Tribune gets the names of the fans who chanted basketball at a black player for the Capitals last week, should we out them? There were four fans at a Blackhawks game. They're playing the Capitals. Capitals have an African-American on their team. He's in the penalty box. The people right around him start chanting basketball, basketball, basketball. If we find out who those people are, and the Blackhawks have said, we've intervened, those people will never be allowed to attend a Blackhawks game again. That's difficult to enforce, but they won't sell them season tickets anyway. Should we tell people who those people are? Your colleague, Stephen Rosenblum, on the sports page of the Tribune, really wants to know who these people are. He wants them to suffer the sort of humiliation that maybe this guy did or minorities do. And so he's all out for their names. Let's get them.
I'm surprised that they haven't been identified, right? Because
isn't it
at least
amazing
two of them you can see pretty clearly who they are. Does the media have the responsibility of outing them?
I'm not saying we have the responsibility to find them, but suppose
what's
it fell
public,
in your lap.
What's the public interest in
I don't think there is any. Quite disagree with Steve Rosenblum. I don't think they should out those people.
I think there's a risk to outing them. I think you end up, if you publish their names and people find them and commit violence against them, they haven't been charged with a crime. Yeah, what they did was pretty rotten.
Who outed Steve Bartman? How did we come to know his name?
Well, the way it was written this week, because it came up, was that we knew it from the Cubs. But I don't know that the Cubs are the first ones to say that. Mm-hmm. Boy, I don't know how we first found out Steve Bartman. It's amazing we don't know who these four people are. You know their friends know who they are. You know mm-hmm. their enemies kind of know who they are. There must be somebody that doesn't like them in the family or at work that would love to see them get busted, but it hasn't happened. If the Blackhawks, though, found out and released those names, and then somebody sought vengeance on them, I think that's on the Blackhawks then, and I don't think they should or want any part of that.
There is some responsibility in the media to say, okay, what as Steve says, what's the public interest in knowing these individuals? Are we saying that these are the only racists in Chicago?
Punishment.
Are we at risk of them chanting again? I mean, is that what it is? You know, they've been punished.
Right, that's what somebody said. I'm just reading my text line this week. Well, that'll teach the next guy not to chant us. It's funny, too, because a lot of people were questioning the depth of the slur basketball.
Right. They're like the gang who can't shoot straight. I mean, I think if they wanted to be offensive and banned for life, they could have picked a better chant.
Well, they thought they were being clever. They were having their cake and eating it. But I think the import of that is pretty clear.
And oh, absolutely clear.
I'm not worried about what they said. It was what they meant. This is Robin Baumgarten of WGN-TV talking to a Muslim fashion blogger. Are you guys up to speed on this story? They do one of these sit-down chit-chats with a woman. I'm not saying that this was an inappropriate or silly interview, but I think it was the interview they didn't intend for it to be, and that is she sits down and the conversation ostensibly is going to be about the message of the hijab and how it is received.
Some of our viewers may say, we cannot trust Iran.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts?
I mean, I don't think we can trust this country. I mean, what has this country done to the majority of the countries in the Middle East? You know, like, I don't think Iran's having nuclear weapons. I'm a pacifist. I don't believe in violence. A lot of these weapons in the Middle East are completely brought in by the United States.
A lot of Americans might take offense to that. You're an American. You don't sound like an American when you say that, you know what I mean?
That's because I've read, you know, and I think that it's really important that we look beyond sort of these really simple narratives that we're told. This country literally was built on the backs of black slaves and after the genocide of indigenous people. And I think there's a lot that we can be proud about, but I think that we shouldn't let that sort of blindside us for the realities of the situation.
So I found out about that when I got a tweet from an Irish cousin of mine working in Dubai. I mean, this thing is taken off around the world.
It's been seen 10 million times more around the world.
And I think it's completely misunderstood.
The line that's getting traction is you don't sound like an American.
But if you listen, you know, you've done these interviews. I've seen you. I've done these interviews where you sit down and you think it's something else.
Yeah.
Like you said, this was going to be a cute female blogger about fashion. And they sat down, Robin and Larry, and I'm assuming, and it wasn't what they expected. You could even tell I know Larry, but one of the questions he asked, you know, it sounded like he was reaching, trying to figure out what to say next.
Oh, yes. The lady would say one very strident and brilliant, but very opinionated thing. And then they would just ask. They didn't even engage because I think you might have then be, if you got drawn into this conversation, suddenly you're having this geopolitical conversation about America's treatment of Muslims. And that's not what they wanted to do.
And so Robin said, you know, you're an American. She said, you're an American. Your friends are American. You don't sound American. What do you say to them? That's not an altogether unfair question, although the words might have been.
I think just the way you say you don't sound American, it's very American to criticize the government. I mean, it's certainly fine to do that. I mean, I think the question she was trying to pose is, well, it sounds like you're on their side.
She was just trying to say that here you're being critical. Opponents might take offense to that. What is your response? She slipped up. She didn't mean to say that you can't criticize your government, because I agree with you, Eric. I think criticizing government and being aware of our intervention in a lot of these Middle East conflicts is extremely American.
She's probably getting beat up. You don't sound very pro-American.
You don't sound very patriotic.
Yes.
You don't use.
Well,
you're being critical of the government.
Days, isn't it?
You know, the offensive thing was then when Robin said that, the blogger said, "Well, that's because I read."
There's memes about that.
Robin,
shouldn't we be outraged about that? She doesn't sound
American because she reads. Let's not be offended at Robin. Let's not be offended at their guest.
No, I came in here to be offended by someone.
Well, that's
okay. Well, then tackle this. The Reader newspaper here in Chicago hired Pulitzer Prize winner Mark Kunkel as its editor, and the first edition under him featured a pinstripe J.B. Pritzker sitting on a black lawn jockey. Is that J.B. taking the black vote for granted, or is it that blacks don't think for themselves? They'll prop up the billionaire no matter what. It cost him his job, Conkle, after one issue. What about that, Eric?
Well, I thought that the cartoon was a swing and a miss because it was so ambiguous. It had both those interpretations. I saw it the first way that when you described it, which was that this is how the cartoonist or the reader was saying this is how J.B. Pritzker sees black voters. But other people said that the reader was saying black voters who continue to support J.B. Pritzker are lawn jockey blacks there, which is another way of saying Uncle Tom, which is another way of saying like servile and so on. And, you know, I mean, that interpretation is offensive. Certainly some black politicians took offense at it. A lot of people in social media took offense at it. It was a mistake. Now, I happen to think that there's a whole sort of constellation of issues surrounding the hiring of Conkle to take over the Reader and the way the staff had reacted to that contributed to the fact that this became a firing offense rather than a reprimand.
Well, was it the official Reader tweet that said, ding dong, the witch is dead?
It gives you an idea of how the staff felt about it.
I missed that.
And so if you ask me, on its face, does the editor of the paper deserve to be fired for an ambiguous, edgy cartoon like that? I would say no. The editor does not deserve to be fired. But that takes that question out of the context of what was going on at the Reader at the time. So I'm not prepared to say, you know.
Yeah, I can't judge it based on how the staff liked him or he liked the staff. As a reader, all I know is, boy, there was a very edgy, provocative cartoon whose frankly meaning I didn't exactly understand. You know, maybe it is a bad editorial or cover cartoon because you ought to be able to know what they're saying to you. I don't know. Maybe it's brilliant because it can mean different things to different people, but what do you see when you see this, Steve? Great big JB sitting on a little lawn jockey.
I see him taking advantage of, taking for granted the black vote. The black, you know, if you want to fix the black thing, like with the Blagojevich conversation, you know, Eliff's reached out to Conkle. He says he's not ready to talk yet. You know,
yeah.
He's a guy, right? He was the guy who broke the Little League story. Correct?
Yes. So he's one of my friends. I have to disclose. He's a friend of mine. I think on the cartoon, yes, this was, in and of itself, maybe not a fireable offense, but the things that came out later that maybe it was going to be worse, that he wanted the N-word in the headline, that he was pushing the staff very aggressively, fired the editors, and all of that together, I think, built up to this case. And no, he has not had a chance to respond to any of this. I think
he's had a chance, but
he's chosen not to. I think at some point he will. But yes, he broke the story of the Little League team that was violating the borders and recruiting from outside of its borders.
Jackie Robinson.
The Jackie Robinson team. Yeah. So
John likes him even less now. Look
at that. I was on board with the kids.
It was a crushing story, but all he did was report the truth.
Yeah. It was a story I wish I didn't know.
But it was
right,
true.
Exactly. They had to take away their championship trophy, but they broke the rules. I mean,
no, they didn't. The little boys didn't. The adults
did. The coaches, they knew that they were.
I'm ready to relitigate that whole ridiculous Little League fight.
It's the Mincing Rascals time capsule.
I will say this to my grave. Well, but you know, you guys, don't you think we're all sort of in the same business here that all mainstream media are struggling to find ways to be edgy and connect and be competitive? And I like people who are willing to take chances these days. Robin Baumgarten might have been an example, might not have. I think this is an example of it. And I hate to see people get fired or that energy dismissed because it misfires once in a while, even bad.
Or it offends people. I mean, can we deal with being offended? And I know you want to jump in here.
If we're offended, it's over.
Well, right. I mean, cartooning is supposed to be a huge exaggeration. I do think the Pritzker conversation captured a taking advantage of element of the Democratic Party that goes on routinely. And I think they do take the black vote for granted. And I think they do things that are policies that hurt the black vote. And they divide up black communities through redistricting. They do all kinds of things to undermine, I think, the black community. And that is what that cartoon to me captured.
Well, too bad for him.
Insinuated it. I mean, I think that there's a question to be asked about, and we talked about this last week, which was, you know, how bad was this? Given that it was a private conversation, all the things that people can say and have said and do say in private conversations 10 years ago, this is fairly mild. I mean, he was saying in the vernacular, like, well, you know, the guy who you want to put in this, you want to appoint an African American to this seat. You want someone like Jesse White, who's not going to make a lot of waves, who's going to be palatable all over the state. I mean, that's what he was saying. It was like, does he really think of blacks as serviles? Does he think of them as lawn jockeys? I don't think that's true, but that's what cartoons do, right? They exaggerate things. Look at his image.
He's overweight. Should be offended by this?
He's an overweight fellow. They're fat shaming him there, you know?
Fat shaming him.
They are.
One of my favorite cartoons that Scott Stantis does, and he's not here to, is when he depicts Mike Madigan and Lisa Madigan, and he puts her in a little tricycle, you know, responding to whatever her daddy says, despite the fact that she is a grown woman, five-term attorney general, treats her like a child. That's a sexist take on that, on her and her father, but it's one of my favorite cartoons. That's what cartoons do. They exaggerate.
Scott's not here today because he's been fired over that.
He is not.
It looks like Eisendrath made a mistake or regretted his decision, and this was the way to change that.
Can I throw something into this, too,
please,
though?
Because you probably know more than the rest
well,
of us.
Well, the AFL-CIO is backing Pritzker in this race. AFL-CIO owns the Chicago Sun-Times.
That was never going to have anything to do with
Sun-Times. When I brought it up, here we have unions buying a paper, but we're supposed to think that that isn't going to impact coverage. Let's see when their endorsement comes out for Democratic governor, which has not yet.
Okay. I got lots more topics here, but I think we'll just go to our recommendations. Is that okay with you guys? Mm-hmm. Or is there anything else, Eric, that you want to make sure that we tackle before we get to the recommendations?
I think we've tackled all the important issues. Actually, one thing that I did want to mention.
So
really
close.
This is like
so
when he brought up
close.
No, I just think it's outrageous that Andrea Rayless gets to be on the ballot, even though the courts have kicked her off the ballot for Cook County Assessor, because that's going to give Joe Berrios, the incumbent, a real leg up to have two challengers on the ballot when, right now, she shouldn't be on the ballot. So.
And Joe Berrios, you think one-on-one would lose?
I think he would lose one-on-one.
If he doesn't lose three with two opponents, I completely give up on Democratic voters of Cook County. He's gotten more.
You already have, but you could double give up on them.
Yeah, I will double give up.
And one more issue. I'm just kidding. I'm only kidding.
Okay, but by the way, I'll just throw this in. Are you guys following Pennsylvania and how they've redistricted? Talk about the gerrymandering.
Yeah.
That they may pick up 4, 5, 6 Democrat House of Representatives.
Well, they're going to go to the Supreme Court. We'll see what they.
Well, they will, but I'm betting that.
I think
that
the Supreme Court doesn't want to get involved in Pennsylvania. They already passed once on the opportunity to get involved.
There are 800,000 more registered Democrats in Pennsylvania than there are Republicans, and yet it's 18 seats, 13 of them go to Republicans.
You know, I know you found this and we talked about it, but it's worse in North Carolina. I think if you look at the numbers, the congressional makeup of the North Carolina delegation is overwhelmingly Republican, and statewide it's a swing state. Democrats win.
What do you recommend this week, Steve, since you're seating?
I really think I want people to find this video of Sam Zeif, Z-E-I-F. I know CNN's got it and others, and it's of his address at the White House meeting yesterday. There's a moment in it. He's a student who survived the shooting, and he's sitting next to a woman who's lost a daughter in the Newtown shootings. And he's talking about how he said, I'm sitting there, I'm texting my brothers, I'm texting my parents that I love them, and then I realized that my younger brother is a floor above me. And he's sitting there, and he goes, and then I lost my best friend who was killed. He says, and he was like a brother. And he starts to break down. And when he does, he says, and this woman next to me lost her daughter, and he puts his hand on her back, and he starts to rub her back in a way that it looks like he's comforting her, but he doesn't stop. And you see that it really has become this sort of nervous, emotional crutch for him, and he continues to hold this mother who lost her own child, you know, years ago, and tell this story. It's so powerful. Sam Zeif. And I don't care how you feel about the gun issue, it might help you understand what those guys are going through. So that's it.
How about you, Kristen? What do you like this week?
Oh, mine is not nearly as taxing. I didn't realize, John, until I watched one of our Little Rascals videos, that you are part of Dancing with Chicago Celebrities.
I am.
I'm so excited about this.
Do you dance?
I did when I was younger, but I'll never, you know, you have to be radio broadcast, somebody famous to be on that.
This is what the Rascal, your increased brand awareness and the Rascals is going to get you onto the next one.
No, I can't wait to watch it. I want to hear more about it. I know you've talked about it a little bit, but that is really exciting and
fun.
Later
this afternoon, I'll go to another lesson. I've been taking lessons a couple of days a week for hours, and I'm learning to do a 2-minute uniquely choreographed by my partner, Quick Step. I don't know how to quit.
It's hard. Are you nervous?
Oh,
I mean, are
God.
You waking up in the middle of the night?
No, well, that's what she said. You get nervous about this. And I said, I don't get nervous about stuff. I've lived too public a life. But the only thing that concerns me is not, will I do well? I'm worried that I'll forget what to do. Because she'll go, okay, here's what we're going to do next. We're going to learn to go ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta. And she'll do some movements. And I'll look at her slack jawed. I go, I don't know what that was. I can't do that. I don't even know how you did it.
It's like in the Olympics. The commentators on the sidelines are going to go, oh, oh. He prepared so hard for
4 years in training and then one time out of the flag.
One little stumble.
So anyway, the date is March
16th.
You can donate to you on your Facebook page.
It's, if you go to, just like me on Facebook, I'm WGN King John on Facebook. And usually on the top of my page, we've posted a video. And if you click through the link, you'll be able to make a donation.
Is this a video of you dancing?
Yeah.
I'm there.
Yeah.
You should do a progress on week. Like, this is how
take
he was.
Another one today.
This is week one.
I have been sort of doing that, and then I quit because we weren't making the progress I had hoped to display.
Sorry. Okay.
But maybe I will this week.
Okay.
Eric?
That's wonderful.
And you can't use that.
And by the way, Kristen, you're like 15 years younger than John. I think your time is still coming for dancing.
Oh, my God, yeah. If you would be willing to, I'm sure they would take one Kristen McQuarrie next year.
No, they don't do print. They've said. We're not big. We're just like peons.
She's begged. They said no. My recommendation is an article in New York Magazine. The headline is, "Do You Believe Her Now? It's time to re-examine the evidence that Clarence Thomas lied to get on the Supreme Court and to talk seriously about impeachment," by Jill Abramson.
Mm,
it's a very, it's, you know, it's like, it's not one of these like just plain clickbait things like assembling old evidence. She does some new reporting, some new analysis, and the evidence is pretty overwhelming that Clarence Thomas should have been in the Me Too stories, and we should distance ourselves from him. It's not going to happen, of course, not with this administration. But and I'm not so sure it'd be a great idea to get him off the court and allow Donald Trump to appoint a potentially more conservative, potentially much younger person to the court. So.
Imagine if the hashtag Me Too movement were working when Clarence Thomas's hearings were taking place, how history would
game
be
over. It would have been game over.
Yeah. My recommendation is I just interviewed Daniel Ellsberg. You remember him from the Pentagon Papers. You remember him from the Post, the new movie with Tom Hanks and Meryl Streep about the Pentagon Papers. He's the guy that copied them and leaked them, essentially. But his new book is called The Doomsday Machine, and it goes from, say, Dr. Strangelove and Soviet planning to Kim Jong-un. It's a fascinating book. He was a nice interview, too. One other quick note about it. In the interview, he doesn't say this in the book, but I said, well, why are you finally writing about this? Is it something you always intended to write about? He said, I was going to write it about a lot sooner, but I had taken years of notes, and I had copied many documents from the government when I was working. And some of them, of course, he wasn't supposed to copy. So he had volumes and boxes of stuff that was stored. Somehow a hurricane hit wherever it was stored and everything got blown to smithereens. And he lost all of his years worth of research. Can you imagine how heartbreaking that would be? So he cobbled back together all of the research, all of his notes, all of his thoughts, and finally put it into writing. And The Doomsday Machine takes you from, say, Dr. Strangelove to Kim Jong-un. And it's pretty good reading. Kristen, thanks for joining us this week.
Thank you.
Eric Zorn, you too. Steve Bertrand, you can hear on WGN Radio. You don't hear Ben, but he's our studio engineer. Thank you, Ben Cortez, for engineering The Mincing Rascals, produced by Elif Garris. I'm John Williams. We'll drop another pod on you next week.
Subscribe to The Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can also listen online on the WGN Plus app or WGNRadio.com. Just click on the WGN Plus tab. The Mincing Rascals podcast is a presentation of the WGN Plus Podcast Network. You can also catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio. Yeah.